Okay, welcome to Bring Out the Best Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Bob Wright. I'm pleased to have you here with us today as we talk about relationship advice. You're just like your dad. We are products of our parents, and we are attracted to people who are like our parents or mirror images of our parents, and I'll get into that one in a little bit. But as you start to understand neuroscience, and by the way, folks, neuroscience today is saying that Freud was right. Most of the program was laid down by the time we were seven, and a lot of it was laid down before we had words and concepts. But our attitudes about who we are and what we can expect from the world and what the world is and what it expects from us were predetermined. Our parents were our world. Our family was our world. Our parents and our family lived in a larger society that's part of our world. And that determined who we become. Most potent in this, assuming an intact mom and dad together, our mom and dad. If mom was the caregiver, then mom has a significant impact on us, but dad is also a very significant element in the story. But mom and dad were once little children, too. They were once even zygotes and a gleam in their parents' eyes. Now, why am I saying that? I'm saying it to understand that they had parents who conditioned them in a world that conditioned them. And the grandparents had parents who conditioned them in a world that helped condition them. And if we want to really understand who we are today, we can gain some significant insight by looking at our family genogram. On mom's side of the family, who got divorced, who stayed together, who stayed together but hated each other, who had kids who were at war, who had kids who went into business together, who had kids who were dependent on the family business. Same on dad's side. Who stopped talking to whom? Who died? Who got divorced? How does this trickle down to us? It's all part of our makeup. It goes into our matrix. It goes into our program. And for today, we're talking about primarily about understanding that we have limiting beliefs about who we are and what we can expect from the world and about what the world is and what it expects from us. And we live our lives proving those limiting beliefs to be true. We call that the self-fulfilling prophecy. Alfred Adler made significant strides into this by understanding man and his environment and that we have limiting beliefs. Freud made significant inroads into this by looking at our intrapsychic and how we internalized our parents and how we developed internal conflicts that actually determine who we are and where we put the brakes on our pleasure and where we put the gas and run into the wrong walls. So we want to understand our program, and our research has revealed a term that we call the matrix. Those would be all of the neural pathways that fit together, but in particular, as they are determined by the limiting beliefs. Limiting beliefs lead to limiting behaviors, and we want to learn to recognize those because most of the world is busy solving a problem, the genesis to which they had never really accurately analyzed. Had a young woman, well, she wasn't a young woman, she had about a 12-year-old daughter at this point, came in to see me, and she was leaving her third marriage and about to go into her fourth. And she was raised poor. lot of pain in the family. First husband she married was wealthy. Found out his mom really had the money and was dominating, so she divorced him. Next husband had been widowed, and his mother was dead. Found out that the mother-in-law, the mother of the deceased former wife, had all the money. So then she married a guy who had lots of apartment buildings, and he was a chief financial officer. Back then, we called him vice president of finance for major companies, and he'd gone to new company every 2 years and had a meteoric career. Found out that he was mismanaging corporate funds and was always just one step ahead of being discovered. And all of the apartment buildings he owned were heavily leveraged. And then, in fact, he was a fraud. She thought that her pain happened because she didn't have enough money. And as we dug into it, we realized that the problem was actually honesty between men and women. She never really loved the men she married, and they had never been truthful with her. She did some work on this. Next thing you know, years later, actually, Judith and I were doing a speaking engagement. She proudly brought a man up and introduced him to us and said she'd been with him for some years, and she had the first really decent, loving relationship of her life. So we recognize these things, and we understand that we want to understand where we've come from and how it's conditioned us and what it is that is driving our lives. And our first caller is Josh, and he wants to be more honest in his relationship. How hard should he push her on this? Are there some things better left unsaid? Well, Josh, talk to me about that before we get into it.
We've been together for nearly 10 years, and we'd broken up for a year and a half at some point. We had been long distance for another year. But, you know, it's been a pretty tumultuous relationship, and I know that things have been done on either side that, you know, we've just left unsaid, but I really feel like it's holding us back at this point, holding us back from really moving on to the next level. But I don't know how hard, if it's okay for her to not tell me certain things, or if I should expect everything to come out.
Josh, there's actually a much deeper issue at play here, which is called trust. And each of you, it would seem, had learned that you couldn't tell everybody, tell the whole truth to your loved ones growing up. So the two of you are carrying unfinished business from your family of origin. So it's not just that the two of you has swept a lot of unfinished business under the carpet, and the carpet's gotten pretty lumpy, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has.
but it's not just the carpet between the two of you over the last 10 years. It's actually the carpet each of you has dealt with. So there isn't a simple answer to learning to trust and to be current and up to date with each other. That actually takes a good deal of work and learning and growing and intention on your parts. It's not like there's a magic wand to do this. Now, that said, I know that you just did the foundations training. And it was a pleasure to have you there. So you learned about emotional intelligence, and you learned about applying that to telling levels of truth. One of the best things you could do is get her into the foundations training, because we've had couples with even more than 10 years of lumps under the carpet. As a matter of fact, we've had couples that were at the attorneys ready for divorce do the program.
Okay.
And end up back together. But I wouldn't rush it. I'd actually work with each of you taking a look at your own unfinished business and getting to personal responsibility first. And little by little, you'll start looking under the carpet and sweeping out what's underneath. But even more than that, each one of you needs to look at the family carpet coming in.
Right.
And look at the possibilities of being honest with your family of origin.
Right. makes sense. I sometimes feel like it was a mechanism that she used growing up, for sure.
And a mechanism that
pretty rocky.
A mechanism that what, Josh? I misunderstood.
She often would use like dishonesty or not telling the truth as a mechanism during childhood to like avoid, you know, her parents' anger.
Well, and that's exactly that plus more going on here. So she's got unfinished with business with her parents. But, you know, it's always good for you to look at your unfinished business, Josh.
Right, right.
Show her how it's done, my friend.
Say that again?
Show her how it's done, and you face the unfinished business in your family of origin.
Okay.
They had to threaten to throw me out of my growth work to get me to really look at mine, because my mythology was that my family was perfect, and I really believed it.
Right. Yeah, I had a tough time with that one exercise the other day with the mother and the mother-child exercise.
Well,
couldn't think of anything wrong with my family, but I know it's down there. I just couldn't find. Having trouble finding it.
Well, so what we call family rules, myths, and beliefs keep us from looking at the family. So my family had a lot of rules against looking at certain things, being certain ways, and there were beliefs about it. And they had to do with everything from money to truth to beliefs about anger to beliefs about fear, beliefs about sadness, what was okay, wasn't okay. And we all live in a prison with bars of our own rules, myths, and beliefs that are invisible to us. So you dig in there, you'll find it, and it was clearly against the rules for you to look at it, so you enjoy looking at her family.
Right. That makes sense.
She probably has a few things to say about yours.
Yeah, I'm sure she does. I'm sure she does.
So, thing I suggest to you is tell her that you'd like to take an hour where you take notes and ask her questions about all the things that she thinks are wrong with your family.
Okay.
And ways that she thinks it's led to limitations for you. But all you get to do is ask questions and take notes.
Okay.
That'll be a good start.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
And in 10 years, I guarantee you, she's got a few opinions.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt about it.
Okay, thanks a lot, Josh. Go get him.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bob. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Hey, Joe. Joe's calling, and he says, when I am with my girlfriend's family, she can be highly controlling. Of course, Joe. She doesn't want you to embarrass her, and she doesn't want you to break any of the family rules, myths, and beliefs.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. We had a rehearsal dinner last Thursday, and we were having a great time, and I said the F word, and it was, I mean, I was out of fun, and it wasn't, you know, with any sort of, you know, intention to hurt. It was, I don't know, she just got mad and angry at me that I cursed in front of her dad and started a long argument, and I feel like whenever we go out with, like, her sisters or her family, and it was a wedding this last weekend, you know, it's like she's just, like, hyper, you know, careful of what I'm wearing, you know, what I say, what I don't say, and I feel hurt and angry by it. It reminds me, yeah.
Yeah, of course. Well, you know, some of Judith's and my biggest fights were around how I was with her family. And there are two different things to look at there. There's one is you operating in a way that respects her and respects her family? And two is you having your own relationship with her family, and then you take care of those two things, and she's got to look at the fact that she has got some unfinished business with her family, and she doesn't want you to stir it up. It's kind of like a glass of water with about a half an inch of settled mud in the bottom. You are stirring up the mud, and it makes the water look as polluted as it is, and she prefers to keep it settled to the bottom. And how dare you stir it up like that, Joe?
Yeah, that's a great analogy. I mean, I've never. I mainly feel like not enough historically. Like that's the first. You know, I've kind of watched myself feel that, and I'm like, no, that's not true. But so now you're bringing the other perspective of her relationship with her family, and I have not been considering that.
Yep, so she's got all of her unfinished business that you're stirring up. But I think it's also useful for you to just learn the lessons. And I would suggest that you make it a point to get together with her father and spend time with him and get to know him, get to know where he's coming from, and the mother and get to know her and get to know where she's coming from, and the sisters and brothers. And that you have your own relationship with her family, because my relationship with my mother-in-law was not always smooth. I'll never forget the time that Judith's sisters, there'd been this big brouhaha, and Judith came running to the end of her parents' house where I was, and her sister was running after her, and I was mad, and I barked at her sister, and her sister's a spoiled little superior kid in a lot of ways, and she just went barking out of the house. It wasn't really a very human interaction. It was really more like two dogs encountering each other in the kitchen. And so her sister takes off, and then her mother comes charging into the kitchen and says, "I will not have that kind of noise in my house." And I said, "Mrs. Sewell, the silence in this house is pretty goddamn deafening." And she looked at me, and her eyes cleared and went wide, and she said, "That's true, isn't it?" That was my relationship with my mother-in-law. She and I had the most honest relationship I had with anybody in the family. I was also pretty honest with their father. And honesty wasn't the stock in trade in that family. And it's taken on through the generations. Fortunately, Judith chose to change her family culture. And we've been working on our honesty and being current and up to date ever since. But right now, my takeaway to you is, since it sounds like there's a wedding in the offing, is that you make your own relationships with them. When's the wedding?
It just happened on Saturday.
Okay, and so it wasn't you two, it was somebody else?
Yeah, no, it wasn't us, it was her sister.
So I would suggest if you care about this woman, you make it a point to develop relationships with her family of your own. Get to know them. Let them get to know you. Get to understand them. Then you can justifiably tell her to let you have your own relationship with her family. And suggest
I feel joy what you're saying. I feel joy what you're saying. Like, because I have good connections, particularly with the men.
I'm serious. I'm talking about taking them to a ball game and lunch ahead of time or afterwards. I'm talking about spending time with them one at a time.
Okay. Okay, yeah.
Same way with the women. That's where you're going to run into it.
I feel scared.
What?
But I think it's a great... I feel scared, but I think it's a great call.
And ask their advice on dealing with her and succeeding with her. I spent about 2 hours driving around to construction sites that Judith's father, Mr. Sewell, was he was developing, and I made it a point to give him my background and my creds and help him assess my future and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, Judith had been divorced and hadn't been well treated by her husband. At any rate, after about 2 hours, I said, "Well, Mr. Sewell, you can tell from the conversation that I'm asking your blessing to my marriage with Judith. Notice I didn't ask permission. I don't believe in asking for things where the answer will not be acceptable. So I asked for his blessing. And then there was like 30 seconds of silence. And I'm going to count 30 seconds just so you can feel it. And right now, I think it was more like 10 or 15 seconds of silence, but it seemed like 30 to me. And he said, well, he called her Judy. Judy's a nice girl. You seem like a nice boy. It'd be nice to have somebody treat her well. But one thing you got to know about my girls, you got to keep food in her stomach. Judy's a bear if she's hungry. That was it. That was the entire father-in-law reaction.
Wow.
So, I do believe ahead of time it's very useful to ask them their thoughts on your relationship with their daughter or their sister, and what they think you need to know to succeed in relationship with her. Okay.
Oh, that's great. That's great, Bob. We're getting ready to move, and I got to have those conversations. So thanks. That was really telling.
Okay, go get them. You know, this is so much fun. I mean, you know, the families, the landmines, and the booby traps, and all this stuff that we haven't wanted to look at. We get together, and it's like, oh my God, we want to blame the other person for the unhappiness that we brought into a relationship. Oh, great, that's great. So our next caller is Jessie. And I hope she was able to get there. She says, how do I trust my partner when I didn't trust my dad? And should I even trust him? Talk to me, Jessie.
Hi, Bob. This is Jess. Everything has been so amazing. I'm learning a lot. I've been really digging into my family origin and seeing a lot of pain and hurt coming up, and noticing how much for me, my dad was a very angry person, but also very, very loving in the same way of wanting more, but just didn't know how to show it. And so there was a lot of where he wouldn't.
Well, hang on, stop right there, Jesse. When you said, but didn't know how to show it, do you know what you were doing?
What was I doing?
You were actually making an excuse for him.
Yeah.
But see, you grew up making excuses because a child doesn't know how to deal with the world. The child thinks this is either a good person doing something bad or a bad person doing something good. So when the child decides this is a good person doing something bad, then they make excuses for that person. But it keeps them from looking at the truth that you couldn't trust. And that's really what you're asking about, is trust. And trust really is very foundational, very early, and trusting that we can be accurately seen in the here and now with positive guard consistently and unconditionally. So we know right now, at the very minimum, your father was inconsistent.
Yeah.
Well, that's disturbing and disruptive. We don't need any more than that to know that trust is going to be a journey for you.
Yeah, I feel like I've been making excuses for my mom and my dad for my whole life.
Yeah, and feel the pain, because we want to trust. We see ourselves not trusting. We act out. We do things because our self-fulfilling prophecy is we don't believe the world is trustworthy, so we aren't trustworthy ourselves. So we cause the world to not trust us, and the distrust bounces back and forth like a ping pong ball, with us blaming each other for trust, when in fact, trust is a skill. And it's a skill to develop. And it starts with being able to trust ourselves. And then it gets into trusting others. Yeah. It's very painful, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really painful.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I just see myself as a little girl making up all these things in my head.
Well, and the worst part of this, Jess, is that you make up there's something wrong with you. And so that's what needs to get corrected, is that you will learn to see yourself as lovable and loving and deserving of love, and you learn to see yourself unconditionally with positive regard, consistently unconditionally, and that's not an easy task. You know, Freud talked about our unconscious mind and repressed self. Jung talked about our shadow self. We all have dark sides. We all have untrustworthy parts. But to become trustworthy is to take responsibility for that. The ways that you can be like your dad. And it's a journey. And we don't try to rush that journey after our year of transformation, where we start to understand how the whole game gets going. We work on learning to trust the world so we can live in a greater childlike relationship, expecting to be affirmed, to be appreciated, and building internal strategies, rematrixing. And that's a very challenging task. It was incredibly difficult for me. I was probably 4 years into my growth, 2 years into my in-depth growth work in what was then called a contemporary Adlerian. And it took me
90
years
seconds
to be able to feel my vulnerability and let myself go. So you keep up and you keep going and just give yourself a break and know it's a skill that'll take a lot of time to develop. Thank you very much, Jess.
Thanks, Bob. Is there like a little exercise that would be really well for me to challenge or not?
Talk to your partner about everything you're afraid of. Mm-hmm. And I've got to go, Jess.
Thanks, Bob.
Thank you. So, this is so important. Bring out the best is not always the easy path. It's often the road less traveled. Now, that's a book we can check out to understand this game a little bit better. The road less traveled. That's what we're